Ever heard of a shoplifting case that could land you a life sentence?
Sounds a bit extreme, right?
It does. But it actually happened. In the case of Ewing v. California, we're taking a deep dive into it today, especially for those of you getting ready for criminal law class.
Yeah, this case is all about California's three strikes law, which is pretty controversial. It basically says if you commit three felonies, you're looking at a life sentence, no matter what that third felony is.
Okay, so fill us in. What happened in this case?
Well, it all started with Gary Ewing, who had a record of robbery and burglary.
So, already not a first-time offender.
Exactly. So, while he's on parole, he steals three golf clubs. Each one was worth $399.
Okay, at first glance, that doesn't sound like a life sentence kind of crime.
No, but here's the thing. Because those clubs were worth so much together, the theft was classified as a felony grand theft. And because of his past convictions, this triggered the three strikes law, and bam, he's facing 25 years to life.
Wow. So it's not just about the golf clubs, right? This case raises a huge question about whether a sentence like this goes against the Eighth Amendment's ban on cruel and unusual punishment.
That's exactly it. The Eighth Amendment is all about making sure punishments are fair and humane. But what does cruel and unusual actually mean?
Good question. How do you even measure that?
Well, that's where the idea of narrow proportionality comes in. Courts aren't trying to create some kind of perfect match between the crime and the punishment. It's more about avoiding sentences that are just completely out of whack.
So it's not about a strict formula, but more about making sure the punishment fits the crime in a reasonable way. You shouldn't get life for stealing candy, even if you've stolen candy before.
Exactly. To really get how the court decided in Ewing, we need to look at some older cases, like Solemn v. Helm and Harmelin v. Michigan. In those cases, the court upheld some pretty harsh sentences for repeat offenders. These set the stage for how they thought about Ewing.
So there's already this idea that repeat offenders can get tougher sentences. How did that play out specifically in Ewing?
Well, the Supreme Court was split on this one. Justice O'Connor wrote the majority opinion, which basically said they were giving qualified deference to what California decided.
I'm guessing qualified deference is basically legalese for we're not going to overrule California here, so why were they so hesitant?
That's a good way to put it. The majority felt that California has a strong interest in stopping people from committing crimes again and again and in keeping people safe. They looked at Ewing's long rap sheet and said, "This guy has a history of breaking the law. Keeping him locked up is the best way to stop him from doing it again."
So the argument is that past crimes can make the punishment much harsher, even for smaller offenses. I could see how that might stop some crime, but is there a chance we're focusing too much on punishment and not enough on helping people change their lives? Could a shorter sentence still discourage crime without basically guaranteeing someone spends the rest of their life in prison?
You've hit on a really important point, and it was a big point of disagreement in the case. While the majority was all about deferring to the state and stopping future crimes, there were some strong dissenting opinions. They felt that this sentence was just too much. Justices Stevens and Breyer, for instance, called it grotesquely excessive.
So you've got this tension between the state's right to keep its citizens safe and an individual's right to a punishment that's fair and reasonable. What were the main things the dissenting judges were saying to support their position?
Well, Justice Stevens thought that when deciding if a sentence is proportional, you should really be looking at objective factors. He was worried that without clear guidelines, the Eighth Amendment wouldn't protect people from sentences that are just way out of line.
So he wanted something more concrete to go by, not just this feels excessive.
Right. He wanted measurable standards. Now, Justice Breyer focused on the reality of the sentence.
Okay.
He pointed out that with a 25 to life sentence for shoplifting, Ewing was probably going to die in prison. He said it was basically a life sentence, but disguised as something else.
Wow.
He thought the punishment was just totally out of sync with the crime, especially since Ewing's offense wasn't violent.
It really makes you think about the human side of these laws, you know?
Yeah.
It's easy to get caught up in the legal back and forth, but we're talking about real people's lives.
Definitely. The Ewing case brings up some tough questions about what punishment is for. Is it about revenge? Is it about stopping people from committing crimes again? Is it about helping people change their lives? Or is it all of those things?
It's a lot to think about. So we've got this clash between the majority, focused on the state and deterring crime, and the dissent, focused on individual rights and making sure punishment fits the crime. What happened next? What kind of impact did the Ewing decision have?
Well, Ewing had a big impact across the country. It basically gave states the okay to create and expand their own tough-on-crime laws, especially those targeting repeat offenders.
Makes sense. It was a major decision from the highest court, so it set a big precedent. What was behind this shift toward harsher sentences in so many states? Was it just about the legal side of things, or were there other things going on?
Well, this legal shift happened at the same time that people were really worried about crime. The tough-on-crime talk resonated with voters, and politicians wanted to be seen as taking a strong stance against criminals. Ewing gave them a legal way to do that.
So it seems like legal precedent, public feeling, and politics all came together to create this wave of stricter sentencing. But there must have been some pushback against these three strikes laws. What were the main arguments against them?
Oh, there was a lot of opposition. Critics said these laws were causing overcrowded prisons and disproportionately impacting minority communities.
And they also argued that they might not even be that effective in deterring crime, right?
Right. They said these laws were too focused on punishment and locking people up instead of addressing why crime happens in the first place and helping people turn their lives around.
So you had this clash between public perception, fueled by the tough-on-crime rhetoric, and these data-driven arguments about the effectiveness and the potential downsides of these laws. Which side seemed to win out after Ewing?
At first, public sentiment and the political pressure really pushed things toward harsher sentencing. But as time passed and the long-term consequences became clearer, people started to change their minds.
They did.
Yeah. People started questioning these policies, and we began to see a movement towards reform.
That's interesting. It sounds like Ewing wasn't the end of the story. It created this national debate that's still going on. Did anything actually change because of this shift in public opinion?
It did. In recent years, we've seen some states actually scaling back or changing their three strikes laws. There's a growing understanding that we need to be smarter about sentencing. We need to focus on rehabilitation, helping people re-enter society, and addressing the root causes of crime. Things seem to be moving towards a more balanced approach.
That's good to hear. It seems like the legal system is starting to catch up to a better understanding of crime and punishment. But I'm curious, for the lawyers and law students listening, what are the practical implications of the Ewing decision? What can they learn from this case when it comes to fighting similar sentences?
Here's the thing. If you're trying to challenge a non-capital sentence using the Eighth Amendment, Ewing set a really high bar.
High bar meaning?
Meaning it's really hard to do. You have to prove that the sentence is grossly disproportionate to the crime.
I see.
And that's super tough to do unless you're dealing with a truly shocking case. Just arguing that a sentence seems unfair or too harsh isn't enough.
So it's not about gut feelings or personal opinions. You have to convince the court that this sentence is way out of line with any reasonable idea of justice.
You got it. Courts, looking at Ewing, are generally reluctant to overturn sentences unless they are extremely excessive. They tend to give states a lot of leeway in setting their own sentencing rules.
So Ewing reinforces the idea that courts shouldn't interfere with what legislatures decide unless it's absolutely necessary. This means that lawyers dealing with these kinds of cases have to build a really strong argument, focusing on the specifics of the case and showing how a serious injustice is happening. It sounds like a tough fight. Have there been any successful challenges to similar sentences since Ewing? Has the court ever said, nope, this punishment is too much, even with that high bar?
That's a good question. You know, even though Ewing set a high bar, it didn't completely shut down Eighth Amendment challenges. There have been cases, not a ton, but some, where courts decided sentences were way too harsh, even for repeat offenders.
So there's still some hope for people fighting against these super harsh sentences.
Yeah.
What made those successful cases different? What kinds of arguments seem to work with the courts?
One big factor seems to be what actually triggered the life sentence under a three strikes law. Like, what was the crime that set it off? If it was something minor, like stealing something small, courts were more likely to take a hard look at whether the overall sentence was really proportional.
So it's not just about looking at past crimes, but also about how serious the current crime is compared to the punishment. Are there any specific cases that show this?
Absolutely. There's Ramirez v. Castro, where a guy got 25 to life for stealing a pair of socks worth $15.
Seriously, socks?
Yeah. The court threw out that sentence, saying it was totally out of proportion, even considering his past convictions.
Wow. Stealing socks and you could end up in prison for life.
Yeah.
It really shows how these laws can sometimes have crazy results. But what about cases where the crime that triggers the life sentence is more serious? Is there any chance of challenging the sentence then?
It's definitely harder. Courts are more likely to side with the state's need to protect the public if the triggering offense involved violence or a real threat to others.
So there's a line between petty theft and violent crimes. But within that gray area, is there still room for lawyers to come up with strategies and win challenges?
For sure. The key is to really tailor your argument to each case. Highlight anything that might make the situation less severe, like the person's age, their health, or if they seem like they could turn their life around. And focus on the details of that triggering crime, arguing it doesn't deserve such a harsh punishment.
So it's about telling a convincing story, going beyond just the legal stuff, and appealing to the court's sense of fairness. Would you say that's right?
Exactly. Ewing v. California, when you get down to it, reminds us that the law isn't just about abstract ideas. It's about real people and the huge impact our decisions have on them.
That's a good point. So as we wrap up this deep dive, let's go back to the beginning. What seemed like a simple shoplifting case ended up taking us into this complex discussion of constitutional rights, sentencing, and what justice really means.
And the debate that Ewing started is definitely still going on. It forces us to think about tough questions about our criminal justice system. When does a sentence cross the line and become cruel and unusual? How much should past crimes matter? How do we balance keeping the public safe with protecting individual rights?
These are tough questions with no easy answers. But by looking at cases like Ewing, and by considering all these different viewpoints, we can have a more informed and thoughtful conversation about how to improve our criminal justice system.
Couldn't agree more. Ewing v. California is a powerful reminder that the law is always changing as we struggle with these fundamental questions of fairness and making sure punishment fits the crime.
And for all of us, whether we're lawyers, law students, or just engaged citizens, it's a call to action. Stay informed, think critically, and speak up for a justice system that reflects our values.
Well said. That's the power of taking a deep dive. It's not just about learning facts. It's about sparking curiosity and helping us see the world in new ways.
Thanks for joining us on this journey through Ewing v. California and its impact on the legal system. We hope this deep dive helped you understand this landmark case better. Until next time, keep exploring, keep asking questions, and keep the conversation going.